I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everybody. We are back finally for a spectacular one-night engagement to discuss Penny Dreadful, City of Angels, episode 7, 8, 9, with an emphasis on 10, our season finale. I am not alone. I could not do this alone. I'm your host, Cody Epperson, and I am joined by my fellow co-host, Mr. Adam Carr. How's it going, man?
What's going on, man? I'll be your Sancho Panza throughout this whole thing tonight. Doing well. How are you? Hope you're well. I know we're missing a little bit of the team, but we're gonna keep it going.
Yeah, we'll keep it going. I'm doing well. It's good to be back. It's been a minute. We haven't recorded for the last four or five episodes. So we got a lot to talk about.
We do. Should we catch up on episodes 7, 8, 9 right now?
Yeah, let's pop in. Let's just jump in real quick. So we don't have Brian with us tonight. We're waiting for Tori to join. Hopefully she'll pop in shortly. But in the meantime, let's talk episode 7 real quick. I just want to jump in and get started because we got so much to talk about. Episode 7, Maria and the Beast. And what I have written down from this episode is Maria, who is the mother of Detective Santiago and the whole family, she's a maid at Dr. Kraft's house in Pasadena, and the literal devil moves in to the house and Maria, the mom, is now working, literally working for the devil. And I thought that was such a crazy irony and a twist. Adam, how did you feel about that?
I mean, I feel good because Tommy's so freaked out by that little Frank, that little
Tom. Oh,
they're like, you know, and she's like, maybe they should share rooms. Yeah. I'm like, so we can kill him? Sure.
Right.
He kills his hamster. What a
That was so messed up.
So, yeah. I mean, it's pretty terrible. She's horrible. Maria, it's funny. The Vega family is like the Skywalker family in the Star Wars universe. They're just around where all this big stuff is going down. And whether they have villains come out of their family or heroes. Tori, hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Y'all, I don't know why I thought this started at 8.
You're here now.
Ladies and gentlemen, 7. We have the lovely and fantastic Tori Weaver joining us. Thank you so much for coming on, Tori.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. Good to see you.
We were to catch you up real quick, Tori, you haven't missed a whole lot. We're just because we're covering 7, 8, 9, and 10. We're gonna focus on 10, but we just want to skim 7, 8, 9 real quick. We're just still talking episode 7.
Okay.
Yeah, they're crazy. I also wrote some stuff down here. Let's see. I love Brian, the kid who's gonna make the rocket for the Nazis.
Oh yeah.
Had a very it reminded me of like an alternative facts or like just rebuff of what's going on, because when everyone was dogging the Nazi party, he's like, no, that's just politics. That's just the paper or the media, how they portray them. That they're really not that bad. They're just trying to do these things. And you guys, you get so caught up in the dramatic of you take them literally, and I'm just taking them seriously. And I feel like that is absolutely what we've done with politics on either side. We're either taking someone literally or we're taking someone seriously. And I think, you know, as we've learned from history, Nazism has always seemed to be around the United States. It's nothing new, but it's definitely creepy. Again, just hearing Hitler's grandiose plans of building his quarters in, you know, Hollywood. Like, it's, I don't know. It's creepy.
Yeah. There's definitely, I know we're kind of trying to keep it per episode. And I feel like when you get into series like this, you don't know what happened on what episode at this point.
I know, right?
But there are so many parallels to what is happening now. It's almost like, and I think we've said this even before some things have happened in our current reality, we've just said how much this series really mimics and mirrors what's going on. And I think in every episode I had to like I don't know, just kind of like take a moment and really like take it in, because those words or whatever the script was saying at the time just really resonated what was happening here, especially in the finale, which we'll definitely get to. But I was just like, gee, I don't need. And of course, when you're writing these things and filming them, you can't predict the future. So nobody knew what was going to be going on. And of course, these issues aren't new, but they just really speak to the times that we're experiencing now. And I think this was just like beautifully timed, even though it was like,
Yeah, it was crazy coincidence. Like, I literally watching at least the season finale for sure, and even episode 9, I was just like, whoa, like, this is, like, really on the nose. Like, really just, like, speechless. Like, it is so
that's what it is.
Precise on what we literally have seen in the being all living in Los Angeles, like, what we have seen in the last few weeks.
I just want to note, as we get to the end of episode 7 here, jump to 8, there was like one positive thing, even though Friar Tuck, the poor hamster, died. Maria goes all out in the end because Penny Dreadful, the Angel of Death here, has made herself visible to her throughout a lot of the episode. And in the end, she shows up at her place of prayer and worship, and Maria is strong enough to banish her out. So that is important to note that even though it seems that there are these huge conspiring powers, the power of faith still seems to be enough to drive out something that evil. And then, of course, this brings us into, let's see, episode 8, where Maria is helping Tommy bury the hamster, Friar Tuck, and she says, like, I believe you, and she gives him the little coyote necklace to like wear around his neck to help protect, which of course is going to draw some major shit fireworks going later on in the episode. What do you think, or Cody?
Yeah, first of all, we all knew that this child, even though he's not really a child, was weird. And I hate, you know, I'm not saying this, I'm not talking about anybody's kid because technically he's not a kid, but I was just like, I knew that him coming into the house with the other boys, it was going to be an interesting dynamic. And I think a lot of people just in our reality in general kind of don't really pay attention to kids. They kind of just kind of say, oh, like, get over it. Like, you guys would be friends. They just kind of assume that like kids don't have a good sense of judgment or a good sense of what's going on. And I love how this show kind of wrote that in there, because one, I think we all can agree, a child will tell you the truth. They will tell you look beat down. They will tell you when you look nice. So just, him kind of explaining, I don't know what's going on, but I know in my heart that he killed this pet. And so it was really interesting just for Maria to believe him, even though she isn't. Just kind of confirming that for him. I mean, it sucks that she's confirming something that's scary, but just kind of like, I do like how that was written, because there's so many times when I feel like children have said something to an adult and it's always just written off like, you're being ridiculous, you don't know what you're talking about. But I'm glad somebody noticed that this kid was strange, because clearly the father is not.
Right?
Yeah, the father's not. Also, it looks like, too, Dr. Kraft then goes to visit his wife that he's put in the sanitarium.
That's right.
A great scene where she literally just scares the shit out of him and just tells him,
I love that.
Here, I'm going to, like, you can keep the house. You can keep your little German whore. At the end of the day, like, everyone's going to find out what you are. You find out this guy really is just spineless. You know, like most Nazis. But let's see. I'm trying to think what else.
I love that Maria gave Tom the coyote necklace.
Mm-hmm.
Things are very symbolic. What's great, she gave one to Detective Lewis as well, and they're for protection. And as far as I feel like it's easy to forget that Maria low-key is a witch. Like, she... Yeah. Talks to the devil. She talks to Santa Muerte, and when she gives out these coyote necklaces or pendants or whatever you want to call them, it seems like she's legitimately giving people protection. And I think, assuming we're gonna have a season 2, that seems to be very important to me.
I think it was also very telling of just family dynamics that we see now. I think so many of us, like, we've kind of seen that, and depending on what you believe on, it just kind of like our families, especially our mother's thoughts, prayers, energy, just kind of being over us has probably protected us from a lot of things, whether it's in the literal sense, because, you know, moms can always sniff out the bad friends, or just kind of like having that healing energy that you really feel like has protected you, maybe in a sense, like protected you from something that you didn't even know was happening. And I was like, it's just nothing like that mother love. You know what I mean? And I was like, wow, yeah. You know, this is kind of in a different sense. And she definitely does have healing or protecting powers, which is like you said, Cody, we've definitely seen in this series. It just kind of like played to that. Wow. Like I don't know what would have happened to me if I didn't have my mom's energy and her prayers and her thoughts over me.
Oh, and yeah. Speaking of mothers, I'm going to segue over to Sister Molly's mother, who we see in this episode has a huge change in attitude toward Detective Vega, mm-hmm. which I thought was so crazy because the first time that they interact, she's not even low-key. She's very pretty much just racist and rude to him. And in this scene, they get together. I don't know if you're, Lewis goes and talks to Townsend. And Vega goes and talks to, I wrote down a whole mother because I can't remember her name. But, and she's so nice to him and she's so welcoming and, oh, let me show you. And I think, and it's because in the new, and this is something that was my prediction, which we learned episode 10 was the truth, was that her mother is who is responsible for the murders in episode 1. Or it seems to be that case. Yeah. That's what I gathered from episode 10. But, that's what I feared because they're like, oh, they blamed the one guy, the one Latino guy. And so I think that's why she was like, oh, it's so great you're here because now the heat's off me. But that's that was just something I wanted to point out.
Oh, interesting. I didn't put that together then. That was pretty smart.
Then it was a prediction. I was like, oh, I think she did it because she's the one who, I mean, her daughter was obviously involved with that man and she was so angry. And then she was so nice to Detective to Santiago, like I was like, her attitude changed real quick.
A little too much.
Yeah. And I also think like knowing that Tiago has this, I don't want to say influence, but you know, him and her daughter are dating now. And I think she kind of sees, okay, this isn't really going away anytime soon. Eventually, you know, once you get the pillow talking, some secrets might come out, whether it's murder, whether it's fraud, I don't know, whatever. But yeah. I think she kind of knew like, wait a minute. He's definitely going to be around, and he seems very persistent about like figuring out things that are happening. I mean, like doing his job. So I think she was like, "Let me kind of switch up my attitude before my behind is behind bars."
Totally. Yep. They also show us Townsend has a little date night with Kurt, the little Nazi.
Yes, and they go to that club,
underground gay club in LA, which seems like it just seems so cool. Also that they have,
I wanted to go,
system, so like they can ring that and then everybody switches partners to be like heterosexual pairings
to be safe.
And just the fact that, I don't know, it also pissed me off about Townsend because I'm like, you're gay and you're marginalized and you don't feel safe, and yet you are exactly doing to other people what you feel, and that shame and that it infuriates me even more when you see that. But then you also see, oh, he's the sweet, nice guy. He's trying to have this moment. I'm like, all right, he's dating a Nazi and he's also being really terrible to all these people. Right. So I still hate him, but it was cool to see how that happened. And also getting back here to the end, Frank has the little kid, Frank Demon Boy, Damien, whatever you want to call him, gives Maria this little, trip into a nightmare.
And then that was crazy.
On her head. And then he puts his hand on, you know, the oven so Elsa can come there and be the nice little German witch and just like, what did you do to my child? I'm like, clearly just put his hand on the stove.
Exactly.
I'm about it. I was, really? You want to blame her? She's standing clearly across the room.
But then Dr. Kraft like stands up and he's like, you're going to fire her. And
gives her a raise.
We're going to give you a raise.
Right. Not only keeps her, but gives her a raise. I was like, yep, that's how you do it.
That's how you do it.
That was awesome.
Shut up.
So he's not entirely spineless.
No.
Like, and we have to give him some credit. I mean, he is
vertebrae.
Yeah, he's a slight frame. And then of course, Missioner Nathan Dean had my favorite line when he finds out about Tiago and Sister Molly. A secret lay is always good. I'll give you that. Great quote, Nathan Lane. And then of course,
very they true. Have
a shootout at the end of episode 8, which leads us right into episode 9.
Yes.
Let's see. It was basically
Sing, episode 9.
It was the Nazis who tried to kill him, but you know.
Oh, yes.
Every time you, like I said, every time you think you're starting to figure something out, it's like Nazis. You just, they just come and you're just like, what is going on? But
well, the first note I have for this episode is that Detective Lewis, like, literally goes to that country club and just walks in and starts talking to like the main Nazi guy. It was like, you know what's up. I know what's up. Here's a gun. If you want to just do it now, just kill me. And he's like,
and then Goss does the really psycho evil genius thing and starts telling him about his kids and about how his kids are.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, you're going to be a grandfather again. And you're like, holy shit. These are, it was like a Kaiser Sose moment when Kaiser Sose's henchman like starts telling each of them, like, this is who we're going to kill in your family if you don't do what we're going to do. And you're like, these are bad guys. Like, these are very bad guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was crazy.
Let's see. Let's see. It's,
so much happening.
He says, it's not the lions you have to look out for, pal. It's the roaches, that Mishner says to Goss. He says, we're roaches. You'll never kill us. We always go to the corners and then we fight back. Townsend goes to visit his dad to ask him for help with the motorway.
Yeah. That was interesting to discover that who his dad was.
Yes. I'm blanking on his name. He passed away like this in the last year.
Yeah,
the actor or the person?
The actor.
Oh, I was like,
and they had his name at the end of the episode, kind of like dedicating it to him, and I cannot remember what it was, but that was
starting Cocoon. He was the dad in Tommy Boy.
Mm-hmm. I had
completely
blanking, and it was very much clear at the end of the episode.
Right.
he was very even I was like, Jesus, like he was. His dad was so mean to him at the end. He's like, I'm not going to help you. And it's not because you're fat and you're queer. And I can't, he's like, it's just because you're weak and I never back a losing horse. And you were like,
I was like, sick burn.
And I was like, oh, wow. So he accepts his gay son. But I was like, yeah, he's still.
I mean, yeah, I was at first, I don't know. It was kind of like double-edged sword because, I mean, if he's weak or in spineless, and he's a reflection of you. Like, there's a reason why he's that way. And I feel like that goes to your parenting, especially if you're in politics already. Your son should have been very well, you know, trained for this. So the fact that he's not doing his best or just honestly not doing a good job at all, like, where do you think he got that from? But I mean, at the same time, it was also kind of that I'm your father and I know when you're not doing your best. And even I'm not going to like tolerate when you're not doing what's right. So I think like it was cool because I mean, it was like a very thin layer of like, I accept you, like a little whisper when he was like, that because you're queer, because his parents who, you know, shame their kids for being thicker and being queer. But so it was like that thin layer of like sandpaper of a compliment. And then the rest of it was kind of like, I mean, but you still suck though. You suck for personal reasons, like reasons that you can control.
Right.
We also see Mishner. Nathan Lane goes in and makes a deal with Brad Garrett. And Brad Garrett tells him, you know, if you want a favor for me, then that's, you made a friend for life. I.e., like, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. That's it now. Now you owe me. And that's, of course, to help Brian, the Nazi scientist boy who's building this big rocket. And as it turns out more, he doesn't just want to build a rocket that can go to other continents. He wants to build a giant bomb that can wipe out cities or maybe just giant portions of a country. Let's see. And then, of course, everybody. I love the end of this episode.
The cat. What's the name of the bar?
Crimson Cat.
Everybody. They all happened to end up there at the same time. I was like,
we've been waiting for this.
Yes, everybody comes together. Josefina, Raul, Maria, Molly comes with Tiago, Mateo is there. With Fly Rico, everybody's gang, everybody's there to dance the night away, and they all come face to face. They're all about to start tearing each other apart, and then Tiago throws down the gauntlet and just says, I've never been enough, I've never been Chicano enough, I've never been cop enough, I've never been good enough, I never was in the unions, I never did this. He's like, this is who I am, that's it. And then everybody calms down, and then you know that pisses off the Penny Dreadful, Angel of Death, because she's like, I want a war still.
Yeah. She's like, ooh, this is not what I planned. Like, this is not the script. Sorry, I need you guys to come here. But I mean, I feel like we've been waiting for this all season. We've been waiting for like this big grand conversation. I will say a part of me, I don't know if this goes into like overall season review or whatever, but a part of me kind of wanted the older brother to kind of have more of like a
storyline,
or because he was brought back to life.
Yeah, it's like he was very prominent in the first episode. Like, we were very drawn in. I think that was the one character that we really had like a strong grasp to after the first episode. Mm-hmm. Of course, he comes back to life because of his mother's prayer, and then we kind of have predictions on whether he would kind of like have a normal life, or if he was just like this vegetable, or if he would have to die again. Like, we had all these predictions of what was going to happen now that they brought him back to life, and then I was kind of like, okay, but nothing. Like, I feel like he barely spoke after he came back to life.
Yeah.
Hear anything? There was no backstory, so I was kind of like, okay. It was like, great, we're all here. Okay, nothing.
He did briefly say at one point that he was talking to his mom, and he was like, oh, like, I just, like, I can't. He was saying like he kind of like doesn't have motivation, or like,
I just feel blah. It's like you're
I think and maybe, I mean, I don't know if you guys have heard of a season two yet. I feel like they left it kind of open for one. It seems like maybe in the next season we'll get more of that, because it was briefly touched on that he was like kind of, for lack of a better term, like empty inside, considering he was brought back to life by these devil angels.
Pet Cemetery. It's Pet Cemetery. Yeah. I thought he was gonna start killing people.
I thought so.
So we have, shall we go into the finale here?
Let's, but the very, very end of episode 9 is they lynch that guy. I think his name was Jose.
Yeah.
They freaking hang him in Belvedere Heights. And I'm not going to lie, guys, I was crying. Like, it was so horrible to watch. And so that leads us into episode 10, where we're starting episode 10, which is called Day of the Dead, which is Dia de los Muertos, Santa Muerte. And we start off with, we're at the club, and this kid Lewis shows up and is like, we need to get your family out of here. Things are about to go down.
Yeah.
You guys give me your overall thoughts, because it was intense.
It was intense, and I actually ended up watching those episodes back to back, so I was able to kind of like see it flow into each other. But it was from a film point of view, like from the directing and the writing and stuff, very well done, because you have the you kind of have everyone on the dance floor. The music is chaotic, but like also upbeat and really nice and heartwarming. They just had this like family reunion moment, but then you're also like flashing to these images of them chaining Lewis to the back of the truck, and like then they end up lynching the guy, and it's just kind of like your brain is like, wait, what is happening? And honestly, like, I was trying to focus so bad because they were switching between, I didn't know if they were going to kill Detective Lewis. I was like, what is going on? And honestly, crazy enough, even though this is the series finale, and I mean the season finale, and we've seen all these horrible things happen, I was still shocked that they did that. Like, I don't know why. I expected to be a very smooth transition to where the guy was going to end up. But it was really like unexpectedly expected. Like, I wasn't surprised that the officers did that, but at the same time, I really didn't see it coming, especially after the whole club scene that we had. But I really think that the way that it was written was beautifully done, like the juxtaposition between the two. It was very hard to watch, and I think kind of maybe the dance scene made it like that spoonful of sugar that really helps the medicine go down, even though it was like really hard to watch. Like, that on top of it kind of made it, I don't want to say bearable, but it helped, it aided, and just kind of like being able to digest and take it in.
Well, yeah, and especially too, I feel like a lot of companies now, and like Hollywood's talking about how they have to kind of revamp and redo how they portray cops. And I feel like a lot of people are saying that they're changing their scripts, they're changing their storylines. This show was made before everything that's happened the last 2 or 3 months. So the fact that they're portraying dirty cops and showing that, again, like, it is a systemic problem, because it's not just a few bad apples. This is where everybody's told they're the enemy. This is what happens. This is what we do. They're trying to kill us, so we have to kill them first. And it just kind of shows you that oppressive nature of, are they the good guys? I don't, you know, because literally every time we've seen a cop in this show, they're raping, molesting, beating, pillaging, raping, taking whatever they want, and then they hold up a badge and go, well, I got this, so I'm protected. And then God forbid you fight back or do something against them, then it's going to come down even harder, tenfold on you. So the fact that this show nails it, and I feel like, I'm sorry, I wasn't able to get Michael Gladys, the guy who plays Councilman Townsend on this. They're moving today to his new house. So he was like doing all this stuff. And I talked to him briefly last week, and he's like, it's amazing how spot on the scripts were. He's like, with everything going on right now, that literally everyone making the show was like, it is very important that we show that, you know, races, that people, everyone, you know, it's a concerted effort. And that is what went into the bloods and the blood and bones of building Los Angeles. It was about putting people in a certain place and keeping them away. And it's this same old thing that just hasn't gone away.
It was hard to swallow. After you saw episode 9, the end of episode 9, you're like, you really had to take a breath before you went into episode 10. No matter if you watched it right after or a week after when it aired, you kind of was like, okay, if that was not the season finale, what am I about to get into? Because you can only imagine. I mean, we see that now, and we know how we react to things that happen now, and so you can only imagine how, when it's dramatized on the TV, how it's going to play out. But it was definitely like, this is not good, but a great way to set up for season 2.
Oh yeah, it was just so bonkers. It's just, I mean, like we said, like if there's so many core, like so many mirrorings of what's just happened, and it just, but then it just shows, like, I don't want to say history repeats itself, but just like this is how things have always been and how they still are, and it's not okay. It's obviously not okay, and it's just to. You know, to have experienced everything that we've all seen or done or gone to or witnessed in the last few weeks, mm-hmm. to like then have it regurgitated back at you on TV in a different decade is just like, oh my God. Like, it's just, they did a really great job with it.
And then of course this starts the, let's see. So Penny Dreadful gets up on the microphone. I'm blanking on her name when she's with Pachucos.
Oh, Rio.
Rio. So Rio gets up. Of course, it's like Fly Rico's like, we heard about Diego. We want to bury him. We want to honor him. We don't want to take to the streets. And she's like, no, take to the streets. Do this. And as soon as she starts saying that, and then you see Elsa in the car with Dr. Kraft and the kids, and they just saw Robin Hood. And I'm like, oh, no, these people are going to come through. And then she's going to do something. And then Frank, the little demon child, screams. So Dr. Kraft accidentally hits the car forward. That hits somebody. Then a couple sailors come out. Everybody starts fighting. And there's your race for it. Now it's starting. So now everything bad can happen. The motorway can happen. You have your headlines. You have white people villainizing everybody else who's not white. Like, literally just as bad as it could get. You watched it all just rip apart.
Yes. And I thought that all the different versions of Penny Dreadful were going to, like, meet up in this one spot. And I want it so bad for, like, somebody, anybody to just, like, look at her in these three different areas and go like, okay, hold on, wait a minute. Like, there's something bigger that's happening here. I don't know why. Yeah. I thought that was gonna happen, especially when the Fly Rico is that her? When she was like on top of the car, but then like her other version, Elsa, was here, and I was like, can the husband just turn his head for 2 seconds and realize like she looks just like her, and that both of them are trying to kill you? Like, it just, I really thought I was going to get that moment. Then I also wanted her other version, her secretary version, to be there somehow. I really wanted like it all to come together and somebody to like look at all these people here. Like, okay, wait a minute, this isn't right. But of course, we didn't get that.
I also just want to say, in this moment, Rio takes the opportunity to kill Fly Rico, plunges the knife, twists it, and then hands it to Mateo and says, you know, the king is dead, long live the king. I just want to say, this is my grape soda pop that I'm having in honor of Fly Rico, because the first time we see him, he's getting a grape soda from the vendor.
Oh,
so. It's for Fly Rico.
I did love Fly Rico. I liked him a lot.
He's a great character.
He was, yeah, he really was. And again, like, I don't know why these things are like predictable-ish. like when you think of these situations, the things that happen after them, the reactions are kind of like, okay, you would think that would happen, but don't tell me why I was surprised that Fly Rico was dead. I was like, wait, no, this is, I like gasped out loud. I wanted more of his character. I really did. Yeah. I did not see that coming. Of course, I knew that Penny Dreadful was there to, like, you know, shake stuff up, and she wasn't going to be peaceful anymore in this episode because in all of her versions, she's kind of just a mess. But I didn't see that coming. Were you guys surprised, or am I the only one that's, like, late to the party of realizing what's going to go on?
I'm not. It's kind of what you were saying before. It's like, I didn't see it coming, but I'm not surprised because the way our Natalie Dormer's deadly character is, it's like, if you don't fit in her plan, then she don't need you anymore. Mm-hmm. So when at the club, when he's like, no guys, we're not gonna fight this, we're gonna go and get our friend and we're gonna give him a proper burial, when he's not doing what she wants him to do, that's when she was like, I don't need this guy if he's just gonna not move my plan along.
Which is exactly what her Elsa character is doing with Dr. Kraft. And she's building up last couple episodes, be a Nazi, be proud, be a strong, proud man. And then, of course, this whole fight, the guy smashes a bat into the car, little Tommy gets a glass in his head. And I was like, oh, there we go. Here's the moment now where the dad's going to be like, I can't even protect my kid, so I have to become a Nazi in order to do that. And I'm like, and now he just did that. And, of course, she does the big salute, the Heil Hitler in the family room, which just...
Yeah, that was icky.
I've never wanted to punch a woman in my life, but I would love to punch a Nazi lady and just, you know, because you can't feel bad if they're Nazis, right? You don't feel bad.
Yeah, I guess there's, I don't know. Like, I can't sit here and be like, yes, domestic violence. But
she's a demon. I'm just saying she's a demon.
Yes, I mean, but granted, Adam, she's a spirit. So
true. So she'd probably kill me.
We'll see how well that goes.
Townsend is happy now. He's getting his motorway built. And also, he's most likely going to be mayor. So we'll see what happens in season two.
Oh, yeah. He said, you guys.
Oh, sorry.
What was that?
He said, when I'm in charge, heads are going to roll. And did you also hear, too, the way he was talking about whatever media doesn't follow us, whatever newspapers print bad headlines that we don't like, we'll get them revoked. Whatever radio stations print stuff we don't like, we'll make sure they can't get their licenses. It's basically the same stuff that sounds very familiar to what someone else in power is doing right now. Every time they get unfavorable mentions, let's take it away, let's get rid of it. I'm like, it's the same old stuff. But sorry, that's a last of my soapbox.
One big development in the season finale is Sister Molly. She's all about Tiago, and then she has this moment where she was like, oh, well, I'll see you before work. Or, okay, how about after work? And she's like, yeah, sure, after work. And then she talks to her mother, and her mother low-key admits that she's the one who murdered that family. Mm-hmm. And then Molly, sadly, she takes her own life. It was really, that was tough to see too. Mm-hmm. And she has this moment in the pool with Santa Muerte. And, and even though, and this is my, I don't know about you guys, I've grown to very much have a strong disdain for her mother. However, to watch her mother find her dead daughter in the pool, like, my heart was, like, ripped out of my chest. Like, I couldn't, regardless of how icky she is as a character, like, it was, I can't imagine.
Yeah. And I mean, even though I think we all have not liked her mother throughout this entire season, but even when they were talking, like, her mother feels very strongly about what she did. Like, she feels like that was part of her being a mom. Whether we agree with her decisions or not, whether they're seen as evil, you know, illegal, or any of the sorts, like, that's still, like, you can still see that she still has that motherly love, even though it's not the conventional way that we, you know, feel like we should see it. So to still, like, be a mom and find your child dead in the pool, like, you can still, like, I knew that was still going to be gut-wrenching for her, even if we, you know, feel like she's the villain of the series or whatever, like, that's still her child. And that's one thing that I do like about the series, is that everybody is humanized at some point. Like, even if you hate them, even if they're Nazi, if they do this, if they do that, they all have these very raw moments of, like, okay, maybe I don't hate you as much. Like, I'm so sorry. Like, I agree, Cody. Like, I was definitely like, I couldn't imagine. Even of all the things that she's done, I was just like, this is awful. Like, this is awful.
Yeah, it's like that was her escape. Like, she felt so trapped by her mother in this, in the church. And she was like, I'm going to go away. And in the oopsies, and in the back of my head, I didn't expect her going away was literally going to be gone forever.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like that was her plan until her mother admitted that she took care of the family from the beginning.
Yeah.
And in my notes, even in the previous episode, when I thought that the mother did kill the family, like I had said in like episode 7, mm-hmm. I thought Molly was a part of it. And so this episode brought to light that Molly didn't even know that was a thing. She was just like, I'm just caught up in something that I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But Molly really like had no idea what was going on. And I thought that was crazy because I thought Molly was in on it.
Yeah. What do you guys think was going through Molly's head? Like, just between that conversation and deciding to take her life, like, what do you think she was kind of carrying? Because like you said, Cody, I don't think that was her original plan. I do think that she just kind of wanted to find a different alternative to really live her own truth, but not be attached to the church, not in this type of way. So what do you guys think? I mean, obviously her mom admitting, but just tell me what you guys think was going through her mind during that time.
Oh, please, Adam, go.
Oh, no. You go.
I feel like it was, because obviously she's been struggling with her own identity throughout the season. And I feel like her plan was she wanted to legitimately run away with Tiago. Mm-hmm. But I feel like maybe when her mother told her that she was the one who killed the family from the beginning, that I feel like maybe her mind went to like, then she already has such an identity crisis that like, now she knows like this identity that has been fabricated for her is partially responsible for like the demise of like family. And like she was having an affair with the father of that family, but I think on some level there was an emotional attachment too. I don't think it was just, oh, he gives me nice things. So I think she just, maybe that was, it was like, she already was having trouble figuring out who she was herself. Then to have it layered on like, oh, I'm also unknowingly a part of this like evil, corrupt thing that is so the exact opposite of what I believe or want. Mm-hmm. And it might have just been, I seemed like it was just too much to handle, but maybe there's something I'm missing or not grasping.
I think it broke her heart when her mother was like, and I, you know, I'm sorry too, like we had to kill the kids, we had to kill the whole family, didn't want to, we just wanted it to be the guy because he was threatening to come out against you, but we had to do that. That's what I had to do. And just the fact that Sister Molly, her entire life has been used for whatever her mom needs to advance. So, you know, she left her in a car with guys who were drinking and molesting her so that they could trade for shelter. Like that was very like, her mom has always used her. So I think this final last recourse was, this will be my decision and this will be how I leave, because the way I have stayed on this planet has never been my choosing or what I wanted to do. And I feel like that was her final rebellious move, that was just like, you're not gonna keep me anywhere now, and I'm not gonna be responsible for you doing anything anymore in the name of, you know, the church or the temple. And also, of course, want to get to Brian next. Was in the car, Rocket Boy with Brad.
Yes, Garrett, thank you. I wanted to mention that soon.
And Tiago, and of course, just starts telling him, oh, I already figured out the rocket, but next up is this bomb. It's going to be like dropping 1,000 suns. And when he's just so cavalierly discussing destruction,
and very casual,
and all three guys are just sitting in there like, holy shit, if we let this kid go, there's a very good chance that he could build stuff for the Nazis that will destroy the planet. And so I thought it was a very cool moment, because they all kind of decided without saying anything, we got to kill this kid.
Like,
and
it was, got to go.
He's got to go. So when they stop the car and, you know, Mistress says, I gotta take a leak. Why don't you come out with me and take a leak? I'm like, oh, he has to do it.
Like,
and
there was, this something, is the moment.
Yeah, it's very, and Nathan Lane just does it so well, but he's just like, I gotta do it. I don't want to do it. And then when he tells him, like, look up at the stars, you see how beautiful. And it's just like, he's like, look at life. Look how you want to destroy all of this. Therefore, I have to destroy you. That's it. It broke my heart. That moment, honestly, broke my heart.
Yeah, that was a crazy thing, because like you said, like as we're all like in the, they're all in the car, just kind of like, huh,
right?
Like, yeah, you're gonna make a bomb.
Okay,
right. Oh, imagine being so proud of something like you that you've done, and you literally have. I mean, I don't think he has no idea, but just imagine thinking you're doing something so harmless, but you're so proud that you got it done, and you're just like sitting there gushing over it, and everybody's like, "Girl, what?" Like, it was kind of like a kid like doing something wrong, but not knowing that it was like a bad, like saying a curse word and not knowing that it was a bad thing, and then everybody's like, "I'm gonna let you rock out," but then after this, I have to discipline you in some type of way.
Yeah,
it was just like, this is awkward.
You know, notwithstanding that every person literally who was responsible for building the atom bomb or different stuff regrets it, hates it, wishes they could uninvent it, that literally you're just making stuff that will be, you know, destruction. So anyway, Debbie Downer there moment. But as we're wrapping up to the end here, they built the motorway. They did everything.
Yeah, I was going to say they built the motorway. And I thought, and it was so crazy the way they, I think Tiago says it, which I was a little, again, tuna on the nose. It was part, had some cheese, but it was extremely relevant. It's like they're not building motorways, they're building walls. And it was a very, it was a very powerful statement. And
very poetic.
Yeah, and it was just like very, it's true. It's exactly what they're doing. And it's bonkers, because the way that this city currently is built is very much like that. And it's and it was just so crazy to end the series too, with they're standing there watching the construction start, and we have Townsend, we have Miss Lady Devil Church, we have the Nazis all standing there watching the construction, and that was our sweet kiss of death into the end of the season.
And Penny Dreadful, she shows up at the end to talk to Tiago and says, "When the world's ready for me, I'll be there.
Oh, yeah.
Ready to fight me? Will you do whatever?" So the fact that he's aware, so maybe he'll be a bit more open to everything Maria says next season. Hopefully we'll see now Townsend's in bed with these Nazis. They're thinking that they're going to, you know, build the next Reich in America for 1,000 years. This whole season felt a little bit like season one of Game of Thrones. Like, it was just setting up all these characters.
And yeah. Now, ooh, maybe, yeah.
Theo's over here with Pachuco. Tiago's over here with Mishner, like, City of Angels needs us, pal. Raul's still figuring out what he's doing. Maria's fighting Elsa and the Germans, and Dr. Kraft is becoming a Nazi. Like, everybody's picking their sides now. It's like a modern-day Game of Thrones a little bit, but I'm really excited for season two. There's got to be a season two.
Yeah. Yeah. Set up too nicely for a season two for us to not get one.
It we just need to be able to film again.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. But yeah, it was really good. And you know, I knew it was good because like I was watching it and my mom actually was walking by when I was watching it on the couch. And that last, I guess, little like monologue or whatever that Tiago does at the end, just about, you know, they're not building roadways, they're building walls. She like looked and it kind of like caught her attention, because I mean, you don't know. Honestly, she probably didn't know if CNN was on, if Penny Dreadful was on, or something from last year was on. It was just so relevant that it really does make you raise an eyebrow, because it could apply to almost any time in history, especially when you're talking about United States history. So I was just like, we've got gold. We've got gold.
Beautiful. I think
yeah, guys.
Towards the end here, should we...
Yeah, I'm at a loss for words. It's been, sorry, I have this little thing in front of me. You guys, it's been such a great season. I very much look forward to more. If those of you listening and watching, thank you so much. Comment, Willie would love to get back to you, because there's so much more on this show that we probably haven't touched on that we should touch on, because there's literally so much content to discuss. But in the meantime, before that happens, you guys, where can you be found outside of this panel, Tori?
Yes, while we wait for them to be able to film season two, you can find me on Instagram at Toxic Model or on Twitter at Tori with two E's, like I say all the time. Click around the channel, see if there's something that you like. If there's a show that you're an obsessed fan over, we're probably covering it in some type of way. So definitely look over there. You might find our faces.
Excellent. How about you, Adam?
I'm Adam here, Horribly Hollywood Single. Check me out on Instagram, Facebook, also on AfterBuzz TV, Horribly Hollywood Single. We talk bad dates, and you guys are great. Thank you so much, and look forward to seeing you in season two.
Yes, and I'm Cody. You can find me on Instagram at Cody Epp, CodyYYEPP. You can bounce around AfterBuzz. I have a few different shows up on there going around. And yeah, we look forward to a season two, and hopefully we'll see you guys soon. So thank you all for listening, and thank you for watching. Bye, guys. It's been a good season.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.